Okay, so continuing in Pirkei Avos, we began a shiur this past Shabbos. I spoke about Perek Aleph, so we are now moving on to Perek Beis in the summer cycle of learning Pirkei Avos. And I always like to look for one Mishnah that catches my eye in the Perek and, you know, delve into it. And what is fascinating is that when I looked at this particular Mishnah, even what I have here on the sheet in source number one, which is the full Mishnah in towards the beginning of the second Perek, as it was, I thought I was only going to focus on the second half of the Mishnah, where you see actually conveniently the way it works out on the page. You see on the second line, Hillel Omer. I wasn't even going to get into the first part of the Mishnah, which is kind of a continuation from one of the Tanaim of the previous Mishnah. But as you will see, and we'll read in a moment, Hillel actually says, I think it's five things. And I thought, in fact, my wife asked me yesterday, what are you speaking about? I said, well, I'm taking a Mishnah and there's four or five things and we'll speak, you know, a few different points about each of them. But as it turns out, the more and more I looked into this yesterday, there was so much to speak about just on the one issue of community, which is the first thing that Hillel speaks about, that I could barely fit it into one double-sided sheet, and there's even more I could have put on, and therefore, Emir Hashem, there'll be future opportunities or future years where we can discuss the other aspects even of Hillel's statement in the Mishnah, but I really want to focus on four words in the Mishnah, and this is part of the beauty of Torah generally, and specifically the beauty of Pirkei Avos, that from just four words, there is so much nuance, so much substance, and so much profound wisdom that we can kind of unpack. So with all that introduction said, take a look at the first source on your sheet, and you see that the Mishnah in Avos, there, Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalet, lists a number of statements from Hillel. We'll read all the statements, and then we'll just focus on the one that we're going to give shiur on. So the first thing Hillel says, where it's underlined, Al tifrosh min hatzibor. You shouldn't separate yourself from the tzibor. Now, of course, what Hillel does not say is why not? And that's going to be the basis of the rest of the shiur, but let's hold that thought for a second, just to get a little bit of a sense of other things that Hillel will say. Al ta'amin ba'atzmacha ad yom motcha, right? Don't be so confident in yourself, don't believe in yourself so much, so to speak, until you pass away, which, again, I don't think it's intended to be too depressing, but the point is, you know, it's a variation of don't count your chickens, so to speak. I mean, don't think I've accomplished X or Y, because unfortunately, even with years of success or, you know, everything's fine, but unfortunately, even at the last minute or at later stages in one's life, whether it's religiously or otherwise, things can go sideways. You know, don't rest on your laurels, so to speak. Al tadin es chavercha chati yel mukomo. Very, very important idea. You know, it would seem to be self-evident, but there's certainly what to talk about here as well. Right? You shouldn't judge another person until you walk a mile in their shoes. I think we said it first. Al tomar devar she'efshar l'shmoa she'sofo l'hishamea. This is one of the statements in the Mishnah, which actually is really unclear, but for our purposes, it seems like it's saying, don't say something in a kind of confusing, vague way, and you assume that eventually people will figure out what you want to say, right? That's not a good way to be a parent, a teacher, or a communicator. You have to be much more clear when you speak. And lastly, Al tomar kesh'efna eshna shema lo tifna. Don't say, you know, I don't have time to learn, I'm busy, because when I have more free time, I'll learn, because who said you'll ever be free? Again, many the wisdom of this is self-evident, even though had we wanted, we could have spent time in the Mefarshim, ask all sorts of questions and add all sorts of nuances to all of these statements. But all of them somewhat are straightforward, but they're all straightforward in very interesting and profound ways. And really, as I said, it was almost a surprise to me, but I hope it was a good decision. I think it will be. That instead of kind of doing an overview of all the different points in the Mishnah, I wanted to focus specifically on this one, which happens to be the first one that Hillel says, Al tifrosh min hatzibur. Now, I will mention, by the way, just as in passing, we won't have time to do this inside, but I did see one of the mafarshim that wondered, you know, what's the continuity between all these five things that Hillel said? Are these just random? You know, he's kind of spitballing, he just random things. So one of the mafarshim actually suggested, no, the main thing is the first one, Al tifrosh min hatzibur, and that the other four are other reasons or excuses why you might have given, why I can't get involved in the community, I can't be on the board of this, or I can't volunteer for that, because of all these different four reasons, and each one of them actually are not good excuses, etc. It could be that that's part of the theory as well, but we're not going to focus on that, but I'm just mentioning it because it underscores, at least according to that Mefarish, that really the main one, it's not just that it's the first one, the main one of this list, and I think it's really, really fascinating, is a Hillel's statement initially, Al tifrosh min hatzibur. So basically, there are two ways to ask what I think will ultimately be the same question, and this is where all the Mefarshim offer different interpretations, and I think there's really going to be a lot of interesting food for thought for us, and that is, you can either say, why not? Hillel didn't say, why not? Well, I want to be, why not? Or alternatively, you could ask it in a different way, which is, what's the benefit of tzibur? Right, so what would you be giving up? Why is the Mishnah recommending that you don't separate yourself? What are we even referring to? So as we shall see, in the various groups of Mefarshim, different points are mentioned. And each one of them, as I say, there are other sources that support the commentary on Perkei Avos. And each one of them, I think, are really, really interesting food for thought. So the first interpretation that one encounters, certainly if you're just kind of reading Mishnayos, so this is a little bit in Rashi as well, but I gave it to you from the Bar Tanura and source number two, is what is the Mishnah talking about? Something very specific. Says the Bar Tanura, and Rashi says this as well, as do others. Ella, source number two, Hishtatef Bitzaratam. We're specifically referring to the idea of being emotionally invested in your community. And if Nebuch, there's a tzara, there's something difficult, someone's going through something in the community, it could be the community as a tzara, you know, the school's running out of money, we need to have an emergency meeting, how are we going to fund the school, how are we going to fund the shul, there's not going to be, we need to do this to make a mikvah, youth at risk, tznius panel, it could be all sorts of different things. If there's a challenge or something, a problem in the community, don't just say, you know what, but I'm okay, my kids are okay, I have money. No, you can't separate yourself from the community. You have to be part and parcel of the community. The Bar Tanura refers to, in the continuation, a Gemara. So we'll see the Gemara itself. Instead of he gives a one-line summary, but it really is more powerful to see the Gemara in its original, and that's source number three. Says the Gemara as follows. This is probably the most famous Gemara about this idea, and again, it really is powerful in many ways. Says the Gemara, Bizman Shi Yisrael, source number three, Shriyan Bitzar, Upir Shechavmian. The community is suffering. The community is having a difficult time. And somebody says, you know what? It's not kashur to me. It's not connected to me. I'm okay. My kids are okay. I got enough money in the bank. No problem. This is a terrible, terrible thing, says the Gemara. And the Gemara, in very, very almost fantastical language and imagery, describes the condemnation of such a person and such an attitude. Boyin. There's this tradition, obviously a mystical tradition, don't ask me to explain it, of two angels that accompany a person. Some of the Mefarshim point out, there's another Gemara that talks about how when the father comes home from shul Friday night and sees, you know, if the table is set and the candles are lit, and the two angels say, oh, should be this way next week as well. You know, what a beautiful house, harmony, etc. If God forbid things are more unsettled in the house when he comes home, then the angels will say, it should be this way next week. So that's a Gemara, which I sometimes speak about in the context of Shabbos. We might have mentioned this in an earlier woman's year. I think we might have mentioned that, actually. Anyway, so could be these are the same two angels, similar idea that somehow we have angels kind of all around us. And what will these angels do if they see that you are separating yourself from the community? Manichin lo yadein al rosho. They'll, so to speak, put their hands on your head, but not like, you know, mommy or daddy giving a bracha on Friday night. This is not something you'd want to hear. Omrim, and they say, ploni ze shepirish min atzibur, al yeireb ben nechmas tzibur. You don't want to be there when the going gets rough. You're also not going to have any of the benefits of the community. When the community has salvation, you're not going to benefit from that as well. And the Gemara continues and gives other formulations of that, other traditions. Bezman shatzibor shari b'tzar al yomar adam. A person shouldn't say when everyone else is suffering, Eilech lebeiti v'ochel v'esht. I have enough grain. I got enough money. I'm okay. V'shalom aleich nafshi. I'll be okay. Rather, yitzar adam imatzibor. Even if you're not personally afflicted or affected, you have to feel the pain, as we would say. And where do we know this from? So the Mefarshim give two psukim as sources. So the Gemara quotes actually one, shekein matzina b'moshe rabbeinu. What is it talking about? When the Jewish people left Egypt, who attacks? Amalek. So Yoshua is down in the valley with the soldiers fighting, and Moshe's up on the mountain davening. And what does the pasuk say? Perek yid zayin, pasuk yid bet. Moshe's hands were very heavy and he was tired. He sat down on a rock. Now, I don't know how big it was, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't so comfortable because it's not so comfortable to sit on a rock. So the Gemara itself says they didn't have any pillows. They couldn't find anything softer for Moshe to sit on. And then says the Gemara, no, of course they could have. Rather, Moshe said specifically, Hol v'Yisrael shruyin v'tzar, since the Jewish people are suffering, I'm not at battle. I have a different role here. I'm, so to speak, the general up on high. But still, afani imahem b'tzar. I also have to suffer along with them. And again, the very famous quote to finish up the Gemara, kal mitzara atzmo imatzibur, zoche v'roa benechmas hatzibur. And this is parallel and reminiscent of a similar Gemara when it comes to like the Beis HaMikdash and the Churban, right? Someone who's not mourning the Beis HaMikdash will not have the benefit, exactly the merit of seeing the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt. So this is a very, very powerful expression of that. I saw some of Farshim point out in source number 4, this is also Mordechai's message to Esther. Don't think you can hide in the palace and you're going to be okay. So again, if you're just reading Megillas Esther as a story, and it is, you know, the story of all stories, as I've said before, it's some of the most exciting part of, I think, book in all of Tanakh, the best story. But so, you know, you could give all sorts of other explanations that are not necessarily the same as this exactly when you read the story just as a pshat level. But some of the Mefarshim say, no, that's really what Mordechai was saying, that on a moral level, it's deficient. Not that you won't get away with it. Not that eventually Haman won't find out you're Jewish or something like that. But that on a moral level, you have no right to hide in the palace. You'll be okay, maybe, but you have no right to separate yourself. You're a Jew, and don't forget that. So this is, you know, the first point. And I think that, you know, this is very, very powerful. And I think that it's clear that these sources are describing, you know, almost a metaphysical reality in the sense of when it says you won't see the nechmas hatzibur, you won't see the Yeshua or the Simcha. So I think it's saying, no, that's a punishment. In other words, that's a metaphysical point. Hashem will punish you. If you do not empathize and participate and maybe even contribute if it's a monetary thing and make sure that you're part of the team, if you will, even when the going goes rough, then Hashem will punish you. And when the going gets good, Hashem will not necessarily include you in their benefit. I think that's clearly the simple reading of this. But I also think it's obvious just from human experience that there's another layer to that, which is simply that just being part of a community is a bracha, right? And if you separate yourself, first of all, you're robbing yourself of that benefit. But second of all, when unfortunately, everyone has highs and everyone has lows. There's no one who's, no one can avoid the raindrops forever in life. And if you're not part of the tzibur, you don't contribute to it, you don't help, you're not on the chesed committee that's helping when someone else needed something, then Rahman al-Tlam, when you need something, it's simply not going to be there for you. So whether you want to look at this on a very, very down-to-earth prosaic level, or I think as it's also clearly intended, on a more religious mita kenegan mita level, whatever the case may be, this is one, I think, approach, and I think it's, you know, it's certainly a very, very a powerful one, you know, to be part of something bigger than oneself. I think it speaks to something very real and very meaningful. And, you know, there's something, you know, profoundly isolating and selfish. And what the Gemara here and the Bar Tanura, by quoting this Gemara, is pointing out is that it's more than just, selfish or impractical. It's also immoral in the religious sense, that a person has to realize that, you're not Robinson Crusoe and we don't live on an island. We don't want to live on an island. A community is something very central. And you want to be with, you know, the true test of, you know, whether you're really a part of the community or not is if you're there when the going gets tough. Just like it would be the same thing in a marriage. It would be the same thing with parents, right? It's easy to be the parent for the kid who's always good, right? But no one abandons their child when the going gets rough. I mean, if they do, we have a very serious problem, obviously. So that's true by extension, whether it's a couple or whether it's a community. This is, you know, when you, you know, I think that, you know, in all sorts of, in scientific or other endeavors, they do what they call a stress test, right? Because if you really want to test the strengths of something, you have to put it under stress. And that's when you see. So you want to know, you know, that's, I think, you could have said this Gemara in the more positive say, you know, be part of all the simchas of the community, which I think is also important. To not celebrate with somebody is also a problem. You know, as other people go, you know, it's a little bit of a walk and they're making their kiddush, you know, 3 blocks away and it's the summer and, you know, it's not called Ramat Beit Shemesh for no reason. It's very hot. I'm not going to walk. Other people go to the simcha. That's also, I think, the flip side of this same Gemara, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. To be a part of the tzibur means to be part of the ups and the downs, to celebrate with people and to cry with people. I think the Gemara specifically chooses to speak in the negative because, again, that's the stress test. That's the truest test, right? How do you know that when you went to the kiddush, you weren't just going because you thought you heard they had good kugel? You know, the answer is if you're also there for the tzaris. If you're there for the tzaris, that's what it means to be a good friend. That's what it means to be a community member. And that's certainly one very significant interpretation of this Mishnah. I want to add a nuance to this, which is really, I think, very, very fascinating. But still, if that's reason or explanation number one, I'll call this 1B. And that is something that in source number 7, the Iyun Yaakov connects this Mishnah, or this Gemara, I should say, really, with another point, which we haven't even discussed yet at all, but I think it's part of the broader umbrella, so to speak, of this topic, which is, why is it so important? So we just spent the last 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes explaining in very easily understandable human terms why it's important to be part of a community and to suffer, so to speak, along with the community. But there's another point, which at least Yon Yaakov brings in source number 7, and that is that we have a tradition. I actually often speak about this on Tisha B'Av as well. We have a tradition, independent of this Gemara, independent of our Mishnah, which is a really hard to understand, but I would say emotionally incredibly powerful idea and theological point, which is, I just gave you a few sources 5 and 6, but I could have given you literally a 2 pages worth, and that is Chazal emphasized over and over again in numerous places how Hashem, God himself, feels the pain of the Jewish people. Now, ask me, what does that mean, Rabbi? I can't say I really know. How do we understand Hashem pain? I don't know. But it's not like one weird one-off medrash. It's medrash after medrash after medrash. A lot of them have to do with Tisha B'Av. That's why I speak about it in the Churban. But in general, this point is made. For example, in source number 5, I just picked this one Gemara, which speaks about how you have to treat people who were so evil that the court had to kill them. They were capital offenders, right? So we're not talking about tzaddikim. And the Gemara talks about how Hashem is in pain when he sees that, you know, they had to suffer. Who decided they had to suffer? Hashem decided. He said, you have to punish them. You have to put them to death. And yet, the Gemara says, and Psukim imply, that Hashem, so to speak, is in pain even when that person is suffering. And says the Gemara in source number 5, if Hashem is going to feel the pain even of a wicked person, you can only imagine Hashem feeling the pain, kavachomer al daman shal tzadikim, of good people. Or perhaps maybe the most famous illustration of this in source number 6 is, of course, when Hashem first speaks to Moshe. How does Hashem first communicate with Moshe? The burning bush. Well, what kind of bush was it? So we could consult, you know, the various different movies to see each one of them, how they illustrated the bush. I don't remember, honestly. But Chazal have their opinion. I don't know. I guess it depends on who's the consultant to the movie. If they use the only Tarshav Chazal or Tarshav Al Peh. But Chazal have an opinion, and Rashi quotes it very famously in source number 6. This is Rashi on the pasuk mitoch hasneh. So Rashi understands from Chazal that this was kind of a thorn bush, a very brittle or sharp bush. And you might have said, okay, well, what else grows in the desert? The answer is, I don't know. I'm not an expert. But every now and then you have these random oases or different flowers. I don't know. I guess it could have been something else. But Chazal understand it's not a coincidence at all. Source number 6, it was a thorn bush, something sharp, painful, v'lo ilan acheret. And it's not a coincidence, it was specifically that. Why? As if to convey the famous idea expressed in Tehillim, imo anochi b'tzara. God speaks to Moshe through the thorn bush to say to Moshe, as it were, I'm also in pain. Right? Just like if you got your hand caught or something, you're caught in the thickets, you're caught in the thorn bush, you're getting scrapped and scraped, and you know, you're not going to die from it, and God's not dying from it either. Halila. But it hurts. So Hashem, so to speak, tells Moshe, don't think I'm, you know, lapping it up here. I'm not enjoying it. I'm not in the schwitz. I'm not, you know, I'm not at the pool with a pina colada. I'm also in pain. Now again, what does this mean? And there are many other midrashim that illustrate nuances of this point. I can't say I totally understand. But this is a very, very consistent idea in Chazal. In source number 7, the Ion Yaakov, he thinks that's really what's going on here. That's the deeper issue. He says, you know why it's so important to be connected specifically to the tsar of the community? Because you're not just giving comfort to your neighbor or to other people on your block or in your school or in your community who are suffering. If the community is suffering, what does that mean? That somehow Hashem is also suffering. Therefore, al tefrosh min hatzibur, because you have to comfort God. You have to be there for Him. Which is really, I think, a very, very powerful idea. And he says, again, if you look at the last line of source number 7, ze'ikar garam ha-ge'ula ha-atida, lavo b'meheir v'yameinu. He says, he was bothered by, like, it's a, he, you know, to him it wasn't obvious. I mean, I'm not sure I was as bothered by the question as he was, but he was bothered by, why is the reward for this? You'll be involved in the salvation of the community. Nechma. Like, why does one thing have to do with the other? Just say it's wrong. What's the quid pro quo? So he says, no. If it's just on the human level, so maybe you would. It's true. He says the main, again, who am I to disagree? But what he describes is the ikr, garam ha-geula. What's going to mainly bring the geula is, so to speak, feeling the pain of God, of empathizing with Him, of being, so to speak, Menachem Him. And I've spoken about this on Tisha B'Av more in depth at this point. And there are other Mefarshim, who make this point that just like we say Mahu Afata, we learn from Hashem that just like He clothed the naked, we have to do that, and just like He visits the sick and feeds the poor, we're supposed to emulate God in Matat Yodei. So if He is Menachem us, so then we have a Chiyuv to be Menachem Him. It's a very, very powerful idea if you think about it. And again, there's more to say, but we have other. I want to move on in a different direction now. But kind of food for thought, which is in this overall first approach that the Mishnah is specifically speaking about when the going gets rough. Al tifrosh menat zibor. Be connected to the people. And now we're saying 1B, be connected to Hashem. When the going gets rough, that's when people need you the most. And that's the truest test of a person's commitment to the community, to their spouse, to whatever, is how they respond in the difficult times. And someone's watching. First of all, we believe Hashem's watching, and we also know that our children are watching, other people are watching. And usually what goes around comes around. And if you treat people well, even in the difficult times, then Nebuch, when you need it, hopefully they'll be there. And again, that is the simplest understanding, I think, of the Gemara, that if you're there during the Tsar, they will be there, so to speak. You also, be there for you, and you will join in the Nechama. Okay, all of that, now we put on the side. That's the first basic approach to the Mishnah. A little heavy, I'm sorry. But we'll move on to something important, but perhaps a little bit lighter. And that is the other interpretations of the Mishnah. And the other Mefarshim don't focus, God forbid, on Tsar and things like that necessarily. They specifically focus on religious observance. That is to say, the value of being part of a community religiously. Not just being a member of a shul in the sense of paying, although that's important too, I should add. Lots of people are just, hop from shul to shul without paying anybody. But being part of the mitzvah observance on a communal level. Much of our religious life, for obvious reasons, is very private and very personal, and ultimately we all have our own relationship with Hashem. But obviously, we know that Judaism is a very, very community-focused religion. And there are a whole group of Mefarshim who highlight generally, and specifically when it comes to things like davening, that that's really what the Mishnah here is underscoring. So if you take a look, for example, at source number 8, Rabbeinu Yonah is probably the most prominent of the Mefarshim on Perkei Avos who make this point. He says specifically, what are we talking about? What do you do with Tsar and when the going gets rough? He has a completely different approach. B'sha shahatzibur oskin b'torah uba mitzvos. It means when the community is doing good stuff, there is a parent-child learning program, there is a community learning this, community chesed that, obviously davening, things like that. When the community is doing something good, you should join them. Ki berov am ne'asafim l'kayim mitzvaso hadras melechu v'en roi l'frosh mehem. As the pasuk says, v'yihi b'shur melech b'sasev rosh yom. Right? When the prime minister, the president, let alone the king shows up, if you get a small crowd, it's pretty pathetic, right? It's a certain kavod to the king that everyone comes together for the tribute and the service of the king. So, barov am hadras melech. You could have a minion of 10 people, but if you have a minion of 100 people, that's a greater kiddush Hashem. So instead of you going from here to there, they have a minion, they don't need me. They have enough people for this mitzvah or this program or whatever, they don't need me. Now, the more people that join, so then you elevate, just by definition, the spiritual quality of that event. So that's the brief comment that Rabbeinu Yonah makes in source number 8, in Perkei Avos. But what I found, which I thought was so beautiful, that it's not a coincidence, is that the same Rabbeinu Yonah, who's maybe most famous for his work Sha'arei Tshuva, so in source number 9, the same Rabbeinu Yonah also speaks about this point in more depth, and he makes two points. One, which is kind of re-emphasizing the first one, but he makes a second point as well, which I'd like to think, even if I wasn't a shul rabbi, I would have been sensitive to, but I'm certainly sensitive to it as a shul rabbi. So if you take a look at source number 9, this is the same Rabbeinu Yonah, but now he's writing in his work, Sha'arei Tshuva. So he makes the same point initially, that why is it important not to separate yourself from the tzibur? So he says specifically, b'sas'eif rashayam, v'kilos ha'kodesh, l'avod Hashem yisbarach, when people are getting together to do mitzvos, whatever the initiative, whether it's minyan or a learning program or whatever, That's a Kiddush Hashem, and therefore you should participate in that. And he quotes the same pasuk by Yibishur Melech, and he quotes another pasuk from Tehillim, how in certain situations Hashem is Ma'od Na'aleh, he'll be very, very praised, very, very uplifted. And he explains that specifically means when people gather together to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, whatever mitzvah they're doing, so, you know, how could you separate from yourself from that? That's basically a vote of no confidence. The more people that come, is going to be a greater Kiddush Hashem. Va'ish ha'porish medarkei tzibur hinu mekatrei kol haskamos. It's as if, again, you'll tell me, I was busy. It doesn't matter. On some level, it's as if you're criticizing or condemning or disassociating yourself in a very profound and painful way from this particular thing. And that's itself a very, very bad thing. So for yourself, it's a bad thing. If the whole community is coming together or there's some initiative for Torah, for davening, for chesed, for whatever, and you don't participate in that, so you have, so to speak, hurt the cause and you've hurt yourself because it's as if you're making a statement, this isn't important to me. Okay, that's one point. But then he adds a second point, which I think is so powerful. Look at the last line of verse number 9. Sheni, the second thing. By you not participating, kihein mni'im leiv chalushi hadeot b'prishatam midarchei tzibur. You deflate the people who do come. Right? You feel bad when you show up to something and no one else does. Right? This is, now, to be honest, let's be fair, he does refer to that as a human weakness, chalushi hadeos, right? What does he mean? Again, it's a little bit of a harsh term, but I think what he's saying is true and fair. I just would maybe I'd soften a bit, maybe because I don't want to feel like I'm so weak. But what he's saying is, listen, if you really believe in something in principle, so what do you care if other people come or not? That's true. That is true. On the other hand, we're also human. And when you know, especially someone, again, this is why I guess I'm sensitive to it in my professional capacity, right? Especially if you're one of the people who really worked hard to prepare something, to work on something, let alone if you just, you know, when you show up and then you see other people don't, it's deflating. And they're less likely to participate or come the next time. So says Rabbeinu Yonah, when there's something going on for mitzvahs, people are getting together and you don't show up, you are basically hurting the whole cause. And that is, at the end, he's very harsh. That's mina machtim as a rabbi. It's basically as if you're causing the community to sin. Now, am I really? What do you mean? I just stayed home. The answer is no. By you creating that kind of negative energy and deflating the other people who worked hard to do something good, they're less likely to do it again. And on some level, again, I'm not. None of us are Hashem's accountant. None of us can know exactly, you know, what the level of responsibility is. But I think, you know, this is a very, very powerful statement because I think it really rings true. Now, I imagine that all of us, myself included, have been on both sides of this. Meaning there have been times where we ourselves were the ones who were in charge of something or just participated. And, you know, we felt the pain or the weak, you know, the disillusionment or whatever it is of other people not coming. But I assume it's also true that there have been plenty of things that we haven't gone to. And we may often have good excuses. Not, you know, sometimes we're just lazy. But most of the time we're busy and we're tired and sometimes there's two simchas on the same night and there's two events. Okay, I get it, of course. But I think this is an important reminder to us, you know, especially if we're not the one who was organized it, but when we have to make that decision, you know, to go or not to go, there are always a lot of reasons to not go. You don't need my help to think of those. There's always a million reasons not to participate in something. But aside from the benefit that you yourself will hopefully get from participating in the whatever, I think, you know, we live in a profoundly selfish world. I don't think our communities anymore, if anything, we're less than the average. But the whole world is, you know, we live in a profoundly selfish world. You know, I think it was somewhat pithy, but I think it was Rabbi Sachs who was one of the first who made that point. You know, we live in the I generation. It's not just the iPhone, right? It's the perfect name for our generation. That was, I think, one of his observations. And because he's Rabbi Sachs and had such a platform, I think Apple actually was upset. He had to, like, walk it back a little bit or something. Yeah, you could Google it. I remember a story a few years ago like this. Maybe I'm misremembering, but that's what I remember. The comment about the iPhone, that he definitely made. But I think there might even, he definitely walked it back, I think, afterwards a little bit. I think he even showed he had an iPhone. Anyway, I'm an Android person myself, so I have no such problems. I think it's just, you know, it's important to think about this because I think we're naturally wired not to think about this. Is it good for me or is it not good for me? I remember a few years ago, we had like a roundtable kind of discussion, Gush, with somebody, you know, with the American Talmidim, And I think this was an issue with some of the Talmidim, so maybe that's why it was raised, not by me, but by one of the other Rebbeim. Or maybe it was just a good, like, you know, thought-provoking issue to discuss, but I think it was probably generated by a real-life issue, which we discussed, even just in the bubble of a yeshiva. So sometimes guys feel like they would learn better if they were, you know, there's a very grass, beautiful grassy area, you know, outside the Beis Medrash. They want to learn there. Or Gush has, I think it's actually literally the best library of any yeshiva in Israel, literally. Haredi Tzioni, the best library. I'm not talking, like Hebrew U, I assume, has even more svarim as a college. But as a yeshiva, the library is unparalleled. So a lot of people like to go and learn in the library. Like, we're not doing anything bad. I'm not talking about going back to the room to watch Netflix. So to be in the, you know, learning.
Can anybody go there?
Yes.
Or you have to
yes, there? Yes, yes, yes. The rabbi of Eish Kodesh goes once a week. I used to give him a ride. Yes, he goes all the time to the Chassidim. He sees all sorts of people there. It's an amazing library. Anyway, we were throwing out to the Talmidim that if like people show up to the Beis Medrash, you know, 4 o'clock in afternoon Seder, and to the left of them, to the right of them is empty. But you said, but I'm learning. But you're in the library. You're learning in the on the patio. You learn. There was also it's a big, beautiful campus. But so maybe for you, it's better learning. But you're hurting the guy who comes to the Beis Medrash who feels like he's a loser because he's the only one there. Now, the sad point, and again, I don't think Gush Talmidim are any worse than anybody else, not all of them got it. It was really, you know, it was revealing in terms of just the mentality of kids these days, as of the old fogey. You know, this was 7 or 8 years ago, and I'm talking about 19, 20-year-olds, and these are good kids. But like some of them are like, oh, we hear that. And some of them are like, but I'm here for the year, and I want to maximize that. That's best for me. Like, so there's a real pull to that way of thinking. A real pull to that way of thinking. But, you know, you have to really think about this. I'll just say one last point, which is, again, I think in our shul, in our community, we've been blessed to avoid this. But I think we're all aware of the fact that maybe even in Israel, and certainly in America, this has been a massive ongoing collateral damage of corona.
I was just going to say that. My parents and friends are just...
have not come back to shul.
Not for health
reasons. Right. They start off as health reasons, then they pretended it was health reasons. They had no problem going to work or to whatever, but shul, you know. Right, and now people don't even pretend.
It's down in the backyard. I'm peaceful in my backyard.
Right, right. And again, I think it started out of necessity. Then I think it's also true that some people genuinely found it very meaningful and they could daven at their own. Like, they're all, it's, some, you know, it's very rare that that's still the reason why people are doing it. Really, really, really. But even if it would be, who said it's the right thing to do? Let alone the fact that for most of the people, let's be honest, that's not why they're, you know, not going anymore. It's a real, real issue. So again, not only, so if I was talking to such a person, again, I think as a shul, we, you know, our biggest quote unquote challenge is the people who still want to daven outside, not go in the shul. Okay, but like they're not davening in their backyard. They come into shul. And we were lucky, I think, for whatever reason, we avoided that. But I know many people, not only in your parents' shul, but many others. Some shuls have suffered from this terribly. Some are doing better. But it's definitely a real, real, real issue. So if I was talking to such a person, I would talk about, first and foremost, why it's important for you to be in shul. But I think it's important to mention this is a secondary point. Right? You're hurting the whole shul. You're hurting the whole community when you don't show up. Like, at some point, it can't only be about you, or else you're going to be, you know, by yourself when you need everybody else. Anyway, so that's, in general, I think, a very, very powerful point. Specifically about davening, again, just, we'll run through this now, but it's true about everything, but davening in particular, a number of the Mefarshim here in Perkei Avos point out, if you take a look at Chazal in davening, perhaps more than any other area, focus on the importance of davening, either literally in shul b'tzibur, or even when you're at home, but at the same time as the tzibur, and the fact that we daven in plural, not in singular, we don't just ask for ourselves, we ask for everybody else. So just quickly to mention a few of those gemaras. So for example, source number 10, the Gemara Brachos, Avani tefilati lecha Hashem eis ratzon. Right? We all know that pasuk. It sounds like we're saying that there's a certain time that is an eis ratzon. It's the most propitious, is the best time to daven. Well, when is that, says the Gemara? B'shasha ha-tzibur mispal. No, if you're davening with a tzibur, that's already, by definition, it's not like, well, Yom Kippur is better, or Asher Yisrael Tshuva is better, Ne'ilah is better, that's also true. But it could be a random Tuesday in November. But if it's b'shasha ha-tzibur mispalin, that is something very powerful. And as the Gemara then underscores in the next line, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mo'eis B'tfilatan Shel Rabim. And it quotes a pasuk from Iyov. Again, we won't go through the pasuk now. But You see here, says the Gemara, in many places, including this one, that there's a certain extra potency and power to davening with a tzibur. Source number 11, the Yalkut Shimoni, same idea. Ain't filasoshel adam nishmat, ella im ha-tzibur. There's something extra powerful and potent about your davening when you are in a tzibur. Specifically, in source number 12, this is the source for the idea, which again, we all know because we do it every day, but this is the source for the fact that our tfilos are all in the plural. So the Gemara says, initially in a very vague sense, you should always connect yourself to the needs of the tzibur. So the Gemara says, well, what do we mean by that? And the Gemara is talking specifically about like tfilas aderech. We don't say, Hashem, yihi ratzon, that you should take me on my journey for peace, but rather, shetolichei nu, I'm flying by myself. Hamakom yirachem, aleich, right? It's on everybody. We always speak in the plural. And furthermore, as the Gemara is source number 13 on the second half of the page, points out that whenever we're davening for a sick person or someone who needs something, what do we always say? B'soch shar chole Yisrael. We never ask for one person. We always say, even when we're asking for a person, that person should be healed and fixed, have a refuah shleima. B'toch shar chole Yisrael, with everybody else, it shouldn't be by yourself. I saw, those were all Gemaras that were well known to me, but I actually saw last night for the first time a beautiful Medrash, and even though we don't need it, but I thought it was so beautiful, I want to share with you. In source number 4, making this point, it's talking about the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. We know Shir HaShirim is all very romantic and allegorical about our relationship with Hashem. So one of the Pasukim says in Shir HaShirim, Perchet, Hayoshevet Beganim Chaverim Makshivim. That's the first half of the pasuk. If you're sitting, so to speak, in the garden, your friends hear. Your friends are listening. Then the pasuk continues, "Lekolech hashmieni," right? To your voice, I will hear. I will listen. What are we talking about? So says the Medrash. You know what it's talking about? It's how about people daven. Kish Yisrael nechnasin lebatek nisiot, the korin kriya shema b'kivun hadas b'kol echad b'deah b'tam echad. When people aren't just davening by themselves, or even davening, at their own speed, so to speak, in their own, what's best for them. But rather, when they come together to daven as a group in unison, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the people, that's referring to HaYoshevet Beganim. You're not by yourself. You're in the garden, so to speak. You're along with other people. Kashatem Korin Chaverim. When you're davening together as friends, as a community. Aniva Pamalia Shali, so to speak. Hashem says, me and the other angels, whatever's going on up there in the heavens. Makshivin, then we listen. L'kolech Hashmieni, Hashem says, then to your voice, because you're davening with the shul, you're davening in the community, you're davening with everyone else, that's what I'm going to listen to. However, says the Medrash, if I daven b'tiruf hadas, what does that mean? Zemachtim zemacher. This one's davening at this time, this one's davening at that time. This one's going faster, this one's slower. V'ein mechavnen datam b'kriyashma. We're not really trying to, daven together. We don't care about each other. So then, what's the very next pasuk in Shir HaShirim? Perchet pasuk yedalad. Barach dodi. I'm running away from you. So again, it's not a new point, but I thought it was just a very, very beautiful imagery and mashal of the Medrash that about the importance of davening with everyone and a tzibur. And last but not least, on this particular point, I can't help but mention one of my favorite sources on this, and that is a philosophical point work, which is very, very influential, and that is the Kuzari. And the Kuzari was being asked, as you know, that's probably a fictitious dialogue, but still the style of the book is, instead of just writing dry philosophy, it is as if it's a dialogue between this non-Jewish king who's searching for truth. And he has a Christian thinker, and he has a Muslim thinker, and he's got the Chacham, or the rabbi, who is giving the Jewish version of things. So in response to the king, Melech HaKuzar, asking him, what's important to go to Minyan, and why do you have to daven? What if a person says, I want to meditate in the mountains, I want to go off into the forest, I want to be by myself? Right, this is very, very popular, in Eastern religions, but as unfortunately Eastern religion has had a huge impact. Most secular Jews, if they're going to become spiritual, are usually Buddhists. There's even a thing called Jubu, Jewish Buddhists. It's a tragedy, because that's in many cases, real avodah zara. serious. It's just sad. They have, every now and then you hear these beautiful stories or you read about them on H.com. I hope they actually happened. I don't know. About the one, secular woman from the Upper West Side, who was bohemian, and then she said, he looked for a meaning of life, and she travels to some ashram in India, and she finally waits to meet the whatever, and he says, oh, your name is Goldberg from, you have your own tradition. Why don't you go back to speak to a rabbi? Every now and then you hear, and then she became a Baal Shuvah and she lives in Harnof now and with 13 kids or something. Right, okay. I hope some of those stories actually happened. You do hear about them every now and then. But the reality, no, I hope some of them actually happened. But the reality is, if that did happen even once for 1,000 other times, they were more than happy for the person to become transcendental meditation. They're not interested in sending them back to the rabbi on the Upper West Side. Halavai. So it's a very attractive thing. But obviously Judaism rejects that. So Sefer Kuzari very beautifully speaks about and makes a few different interesting points. Number one, he says, you know what the benefit of the kahal is? HaKahal einem mispalim b'ma sheyesh bo hefsad liyachid v'ayachid afsher sheyipal b'ma sheyesh bo hefsad liyachidim acherim. Very interesting. I don't know if I'd have thought of this on my own. He says, if you're just on your own davening, you might say, yeah, I'm davening by myself, and therefore I'm going to personalize my tfilos and ask for whatever I need. But human beings, you know, so we all have our dark parts. And maybe there's somebody really bothering you, and if you're by yourself, you're much more prone to maybe davening to hurt somebody else out of anger, maybe not for the right thing. But when you're with the tzibur, since it's not only about you, there's a certain control factor, which is that you're going to be davening for things which are good for everybody and not just good for you. I thought that was an interesting observation. That's one point he mentions. Then he says a second point, which is, you know, more obvious and I think very powerful, which is if you're by yourself, whether it's in your living room or your backyard in Teaneck or wherever, or off on a mountain somewhere, maybe it will be that thing you claim or you're dreaming of great kavana, whatever, or maybe not, right? Says the Kuzari, most people, mehem shema'at tishlam tefila liyachin miblishka, right? Most people by themselves are not going to have the best kavana. They may not know if they're making a mistake or not. I mean, yeah, if you want to be very, very technical about it, you know, is this a day we say Tachlin, we don't say Tachlin, you know, do we say, there's a lot of things that people don't know or they forget or they just don't necessarily have the right kavana. On the other hand, he says, if you are davening with the tzibur, tefilas ha-tzibur ba'od shiucha lo k'reshi yashlim k'tzatam ma'asha chaser b'k'tzatam b'shkago b'shia yisader me'akol tefila shleima b'karav nazah. He says, it's a very interesting idea, he says, then Hashem doesn't look at it just as your tefila. It looks like the shul, or the group, or the minion. And you had a lot of kavanah baruch shamar, but you were a little bit distracted by ashrei. Yeah, but the person next to you had kavanah for ashrei. So together, Hashem looks at everyone together and says, oh, this sibur should be blessed. Right? So you compensate for your weaknesses, right? How many people, you know, everyone wants a solo, but then there's no backup singers. Right? Are you sure you're that good? I know in the shower you think you're Adele, but are you sure? Do you want the spotlight? No, let the record show this is a woman's shiur, and therefore I was looking for. It is hard to find prominent Jewish females, you know, from female singers. Not our topic, but I had to go outside the tradition to give an example. Okay, so do you really want the spotlight? You know, if it's just on you, you're rising and fall by yourself. Much better to be with the tzibur, and hopefully together we have a beautiful, beautiful harmony. That's another point, that he mentions. And then he mentions, the idea again of things which we saw before, people being in, having crises, and anyway, so that's another point. That's all, again, a huge unit we just saw of sources that speak about tefillah. The Rambam in source 17 points out it's not only about tefillah or mitzvot generally, but he specifically says in source number 17, the Rambam, tshuva. Again, there's something, again, if we had more time, I'd spend a lot of time on this one point, because I think it is somewhat paradoxical, but I think it's really profoundly true, which is that, of course, there's very few things as personal as tshuva, right? You're doing, there could be a community failure that you're doing tshuva for, but most of the tshuva we do are for our personal sins, and we have our own personal way of dealing with it, we hope. At the same time, despite that fact, it's very hard to go through that process on your own. As if you're part of a group, right? This is the dynamic that happens in yeshiva or seminary, right? When you're in a growth-oriented group, then all of a sudden that personal tshuva becomes easier. So says the Rambam in source number 17, this is one of the things, if you are poresh from the tzibur, this is something that's really going to hurt you in terms of your religious growth, i.e. tshuva, right? Lefisha bezman shiyasu tshuva lo yu imahen ve'eno zochi imahen bezchus osin. It's right, the zchus, whether it's, again, it's the metaphysical benefit that Hashem's just going to say, that whole group should be blessed, I'm rewarding everybody. Which is what we saw before, right? It's good to hide in the crowd, and that way it kind of covers up your own blemishes. But I would say even on a more prosaic level, when you're part of a group that's growing, that group dynamic, right, that's very, very powerful. It's very hard to do this on your own, right? It's a lonely fight. even though we're doing it for our personal things, when we're part of a group, you know, that's something that is very, very powerful. And for 16, it's kind of summing up everything that we've seen until now. The Rambam, you know, kind of lowers the hammer. It starts number 16, and he says, "Haparish midarchi etzibur, af al pi shelo avar averot." I'm not sinning. I do every mitzvah, right? This is for those, you know, I didn't miss a minyan. I daven everything. I do everything. But yet, I'm separated. Nivdal mi'adas Yisrael, you've separated yourself from the community. The eino osa mitzvos b'chalan, you're not doing mitzvos with them. V'lo nichnas b'tzarasan, and you don't feel their pain. So, in the space of five or six words, Rambam connected both of the 2 points we've seen until now. Is our Mishnah focusing on the emotional, you know, benefits and commitment you have with the tzibor, the pain and the celebration, the good times and the bad, or is it specifically a mitzvah-related thing? The Rambam says it's both. You just say, forget about it. I'm on my own. I'm a lone soldier. I'm by myself. You're out. You're out. The possibility of the ultimate reward is reserved for people who are connected to Am Yisrael. And if you separate yourself from Am Yisrael, you simply cannot make it there. I want to... Yeah, please.
So are you like against the whole like rest of concepts of like Hamelch Basadev, like his Hispodidus, that they like go out to a field?
I would say I'm not against... I'll say why I'm saying it, but I'm not against it, but I'm also not for it, by which I mean to say I don't do it. Right, I'm not a breast lover. This won't be a huge newsflash to most people. I think in my whole teaching career, I'm trying to remember, is it 3 or 4 times? Maybe it's 5 that I've quoted Rabbi Nachman. I'm totally unacquainted with him, and a lot of the stuff I don't understand. But there are a few points that I've actually found very powerful that I've used. But the whole, you know, run off to the fields thing is, you know, not really, really my thing. That's a fair point. But I wouldn't be, quote unquote, against it in the sense that what I'm assuming. I'm not just trying to be charitable about this. I really believe in this, assume this, is that Rabbi Nachman, I assume himself and those who follow him in one form or another, I assume they do this, you know, on a temporary basis. Meaning they're not completely divorcing themselves from the tzibor. I don't know, again, I'm making this up because I'm really, and I'm aritz on this, but if they do it an hour a day or an hour a week, but whenever it is, it's not that they're completely isolating themselves from the tzibor, right? They just feel that, and again, I wouldn't even be against that. Again, I don't do it myself, but maybe I benefit from it. Maybe I should. I don't know. You know, people. You know, there are people who speak, you know, gloriously about the importance of meditation and things like that. You know, I try to do that a little bit during Shemoneh Esrei. You know, I guess in some sense, like that's something of my inner peace time, if you will. But so, again, if a person were to go to an extreme, then yes, I would be against it. But I'm going to assume, and not only because I'm not interested in being controversial, I'm going to assume, this is not just Hasidus, this is specifically Rabbi Nachman. I think the question was on par. He was the one, maybe more than anyone else, who emphasized this idea of Hispodidus, of meditation and kind of being alone. I assume that for a lot of people, there could be a real place for it. I just think it has to be, again, maybe someone would disagree with me, I don't know, but from my perspective, that has to be, you know, the exception, not the rule. And that has to be something that you do, even if it's regular, but it's not the main connection you have to Yiddishkeit. It has to be something that just enhances it. And that's a good segue for the last, we have 7-8 minutes. I just want to finish by doing these last few sources. And these, they're last, in part because I actually saw them last, but I think they really are a good way to end the shir as well. And that is the following. A number of the Mefarshim quoted either one or both of sources 18 and 19, which were completely different, if understood the way I'm about to present them, and this is the way I saw it in some of the Mefarshim, which is that it might not be dafka about tzaros of the community and being there for the good and the bad, per se, in that sense, or even for the mitzvahs, but rather the idea that it's just normal and healthy to, like, not be such a weirdo and not be such a loner. Again, there's some, again, where this could be, you know, hours of discussion, you know, with our children or with ourselves, you know, where's the room in the line between individuality and, you know, being part of a community? But the basic point that, like, if you're going to be part of a community, you shouldn't just be always, like, doing your own thing. Like, there's a benefit to just, so that you see in sources 18 and 19. For example, source number 18, lo yismach adam ben habochim. Right? When the people are sad, you shouldn't be the one who's happy. Not because it's a moral problem. It doesn't sound like, after all. Or the next point, you shouldn't be crying. You shouldn't be sad when everyone else is happy. Lo ya'er ben yishenim. When everyone else is sleeping, you decide, yeah, I'm going to be that guy. I read it once in an article that if I sleep from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, then I can stay up all night. Then you're just a weirdo. And don't be the opposite. And don't be sleeping when everyone's awake, you know? Again, if you have the midnight shift, you have no choice, I'm saying. But the point is, there's a certain benefit. You don't get the sense. We're not talking about mitzvos here. Or not Dafka talking about tsar and, you know, feeling the pain of the community. Just, you should be with everyone else. Be, you know, don't be a loner. Or, again, the Gemara in Ksubas, lo tei da'itosh al adam, el mu'urevet im abriot. You know, be like everybody else. Be normal. Hang out with people. So, you could, you know, I throw that out there, even those two sources in themselves, because I actually saw some Mefarshim who quoted those. But I want to end by quoting sources 20 and 21, which are Mefarshim on Perkei Avos, two very important and early Mefarshim. The Chassid Yaivitz, we've quoted in some Shirim in the past, he specifically was one of the people who was expelled from Spain during the Spanish Inquisition. If I remember correctly, I think he went to Portugal. Anyway, and then the Medrash Shmuel, who we've quoted in the past, I think we quoted him on Shabbos, source number 21, that was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo, who lived in Tzfat, and wrote a collection of commentaries on Perkei Avos. He collected other people, especially a lot of Sfardi Chachamim. And they both make a very similar point, which is, I think, touches on a lot of things we've said until now, but they focus on it, I think, in the most powerful way. Which is this idea, which we've been speaking about really towards the end, which is not dafka about davening versus not davening, but just the or specifically about davening, but the broader, it's an issue, it's a mentality, which is there something beneficial to being part of a community on a religious level, on a human level, on an emotional level, or is it just like Nebuch, I have no choice because, you know, I'm not a farmer, so if I'm not part of a community, how am I going to get food? And, you know, I don't know, I'm not an auto mechanic, so if I don't live in a community, how am I going to fix my car? Right? That's a very practical, you know, social contract idea, right? This one will be the doctor, this one will be the plumber, this one will be the rabbi, and together we have all the things we need. But there might be something deeper than that. So let's take a look, for example, in source number 20, he makes the point, and he says, listen, the whole premise of this, he thinks, is we're not talking about al tifrosh min hatzibur if the tzibur is bad, because then you shouldn't be with them. We're dafka talking about if the tzibur is good. Now, why would a person want to be away from the tzibur? So he says, source number 20, Laval yachshov ki didato to'alinu mi chevratam ki hu davek bibavro v'akel oso ritzono k'mash kazma. Don't think that if I separate from everybody else, it'll be good for me, because I can really connect to Hashem. So why should I be connected to people? They'll distract me, they'll do this, they'll do that. Shalo yasakein. He's chus harabim gadol. No, there's a certain value. We believe in this. Being part of a community, lo samach lo mission, etc. So he says it very straightforward. But in a little bit in depth and a little bit more powerfully, I think, is in source number 21, the Medrash Shmuel. He says, L'chora nira kimishi yoshev levado, lo yishtatef im b'nei adam, hu baz alukim, hu chai chayim alukim, shemishu paresh mehem v'lo yechtav v'lo yaseh shumra. Person might think to himself, listen, what do I need to be with other people for? You know, why don't I go to shul? They talk in shul. Again, maybe you should just go to a different shul then. But, you know, they do this, they do that. It'd be better if I could stay away from people. If I was away from other people, I could just learn all day and no one would bother me. He says this is all a huge mistake. He says, and you might think, listen, what are the things that can take a person out of, you know, the world? You know, well, we have all the taiva. Well, if I was by myself, I wouldn't have taiva. Jealousy, right? If I don't see my neighbor's new car, I won't be jealous. You know, all the different things. If I just set all the things that could personally, you know, kina hataiva, all these things are motzi adam and olam. So I'll just avoid those by not being with people. Let's read the last paragraph together. You see, I liked it. I double underlined it. When me and my toys, Microsoft Word. So he says, you might have thought all these things. Of Amar, the Mishnah is telling us, Hadavar ain't okay. You're wrong. Haprishas v'hat bodedut. Mibnei Adam, to separate yourself, and here I'll add, in light of your question, completely. Mibnei Adam, Iyashar. So first of all, he says, very insightfully, very, you know, John Locke and Hobbes, people, Adam, Midini, Beteva. People are social animals. It's not going to work. If he's, on the last line, he mentions the point again. He says, most people will get depressed. Titraba alav hashchora. That's the way Chazal talk about Marashchora, that's depression. right? You might be excited to be, you know, it's good to have quiet a little bit. Me and my book, you know, and my drink of choice. But right, for about an hour, right? But not forever, right? You'll get depressed, right? And he says, we know this. He says most people who are by themselves eventually feel alone and lonely, and they get depressed. But it's not only that. And it's not only because, as you see on the second line, Shrachav Merubim, the social contract, I need a lawyer, I need a doctor, I need a car mechanic, I need a farmer, I need a fruit sales guy. No, it's not only that. Gam l'shleimus acher yichuyav shitchaber ha'adam. He says, no, and this is so interesting to find this in the Sefer. He says, you know why you need, aside from all the other things, you know why you need to be part of a community? Because to be with other people civilizes you. It's hard to be a mensch when you're by yourself. It's an amazing statement. L'shleimus acher yichayev shitchaber adam ki ir pera adam yulad. V'tzara sheyilman me'adas anashim ki zehu hachacham halamim b'kol adam. V'chen hachacham chayevet hashituf b'avor shlemut hagufa nefesh. Ki mishu parush af eno osa avera, eno osa mitzvah klal. Nevertheless, a pera adam, right? That's what the Torah refers to Yishmael. A wild man, right? You're not going to be civilized. You need to be part of a community to learn the norms and the acceptable behavior to refine your personality, etc., etc. A person, he says, a person who lives by himself is not so much a tzaddik or a rasha as much as a behema. And it's not politically incorrect to talk that way, but he didn't have to worry about that a few hundred years ago. He says, "It's you're uncivilized, you're unrefined." So again, this may all be what sources 18 and 19 were talking about also, I'm not sure. Be normal, be with people. Right? If you're too much of a loner, right, you might be the next Unabomber or the next, you know, guy who shoots up a public school, or even if not, I'm saying those people are all loners. It's like the most common denominator. It's not just mental illness, right? They're all isolated people. Right? It's not a healthy thing. Now, in some of the cases, it's chicken and egg, right? Because they were already unhealthy, that's why they were loners. I understand that. Just giving that as extreme examples. But even in the more subtle examples, right? Again, it's nice, you know, I don't have a solution, certainly not in 1 minute that we have left, but you don't want your kid just reading a book all day. It's good that they read X amount, but if it means that they don't have friends, if they don't interact, they don't socialize, right? A lot of benefits to homeschooling. I have no opinion. A lot of people are, you know, in America, it's getting increasingly popular with the collapse of the public school system in America. There's a lot of benefits. I'm not saying there's not. Everything is in moderation. But there's an obvious risk to all these things, right? You need your kid to socialize, and even as adults, we need to be able to socialize, we need to be able to connect with people, because that's how we refine ourselves, especially for kids. That's how they learn. Again, if they're in the wrong chevra, they're going on the wrong things. Okay, that we know that. But if they're in the right chevra, or just a basically normal chevra, so I think these are all, I entitled the shiur, The Value of Community, Let Me Count the Ways. There are quite a few reasons why we want to be mitchaber letzibur, and not be tifrosh minat tzibur. Because all of these things are really go to the heart of what it means to be part of a community, emotionally, being there in the good times and the bad. What we just saw now about civilizing ourselves and kind of being a normal, healthy human being requires a human interaction. And of course, there's the mitzvah benefits of being part of a community. There's the sort of metaphysical mitzvah benefits, our tefillah is answered better, whatever exactly that means, and our tshuva. But they're on a very human level, we understand why, you know, being part of a shul or being part of a community lifts us up and helps us in ways that we know a lot of this instinctively, but sometimes we forget it, and it's always good, I hope, to use this opportunity to remind ourselves of that. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.